would like to connect it with Sfirat HaOmer. Anybody who has had the zechut of learning this week's parsha, this week's double parsha, you know it's really, really a hard parsha. And what I'm going to try to do is share a couple ideas which I think are meaningful and we can take from Tazria Metzora into our own lives and into our Sfirat HaOmer lives as well. Everybody knows that Negaim, Tzara'at, comes from Lashon Hara. However, that's only one of seven things that the Gemara says come that cause Tzara'at. Take a look at the top of your page. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Al Shiv'a Devarim Negaim Ba'im. There are seven things that bring Negaim. Number one, Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara. You speak Lashon Hara, Tzara'at come. Two, Al Shvichu Damim, murder. Three, Al Shvuat Shav, swearing falsely. Four, Gilui Arayot. Wow, these are big. Five, Ve'al Gasut HaRuach. Gasut HaRuach is being haughty. Six, Al Gezel, theft. And seven, Al Tsarut HaAyin. Tsarut HaAyin is miserliness, selfishness. And each one of these, in their own way, destroy families, destroy communities, destroy reputations, destroy lives. And God tells us that He sends signals to remind us, it's a favor, to remind us that we are acting inappropriately. What happens to a person who gets Tzara'at? Take a look at the next source down. Sefer Vayikra Perek Yud Gimel. V'ha Tzarua Asher bo hanega bigadav yihiyu frumim, torn clothing. Virosho yihiyeh farua, wild hair, no manicuring, no hygiene. Vial safam ya'ateh, he's got to cover his face up to, or her face up to where a mustache would be, upper lip. Vitame tame ikra, everywhere they go, they've got to yell out, I am Tame, I am Tame, I am Tame. Powerful. Kol Yemei Asher Hanega Bo Yitma Tamehu Badad Yeshev Michutz Lamachane Moshevo. So I want to look at all of these things, but I want to focus specifically on this last idea. Badad Yeshev Michutz Lamachane Moshavo. A person who has Tzara'at because of any of these things has to sit alone outside of the community. Yeah. There's overlapping for sure. You're right. Yafeh. You can't sit. And it's an amazing thing. Here's a husband. He has a family. He has a job. He has a community. No, leave. I don't want to leave. You have to leave. Well, can I go to another city? No. Can I go to a hotel? No. Okay, can I sit with other people who are Tameh? No. Badad yeshev michutz lamachaneh. Why? Why can't he wear regular clothing? Why can't he cut his hair and groom his hair? Why can't he keep his face open? Why does he have to cover his face? Why does he have to scream Tame Tame everywhere until he gets out of town? And why does he have to get out of town? Says the Gemara on this last idea, Badad Yeshev Michutz Lamachaneh Moshavo, says the Gemara, why? Ma Nishtana, it's the third source down. Ma Nishtana Mitzora. She'amra Torah badad yeshev michutz la'machaneh moshavo. Why is this different? No other tamei person has this issue. Yes, certain kinds of people, certain kinds of tuma, cause a person to leave the community, but they can sit with other tamei. Why can't this person sit with other people who are tamei? Says the Gemara, easy. It's mida keneged mida. Mida keneged mida. Who hivdil bein ish leishto, bein isha lereehu, lefika chamra Torah badad yeshev. This person's actions did or tried to split people, ruin families, ruin husband and wife. You can destroy a marriage with one word. True or not true? You can destroy a person's reputation with one word, with one eyebrow up. Are they honest? Just that little screech. Goodbye, I'll take my business elsewhere. Now, there are halachot, of course. If you know something, you have to share. I'm not going through the halachot now. But if you kind of heard that sort of somebody is this, ruin. And if the person's going to act like that, they must leave the community completely. You try to divide between people, we are going to make you leave. That doesn't answer the question fully. What does that mean? And I want to share an idea. I brought the source smack in the middle of the first page from a gorgeous, gorgeous set of svarim called Oznaim LaTorah, written by Rav Zalman Sarutskin. He lived in Israel. He died in 1966. Phenomenal Talmud Chacham, a phenomenal lover of Israel. And he writes the following as a way to understand, to try to explain the psychology behind Badad Yeshev Michutz LaMachaneh Moshavo. I think that it also explains all the other things. I'm going to read it. It's a lot of lines. I'm going to read a lot of it, not all of it. And here we go. Line 1. Badad Yeshev Michutz LaMachaneh Moshavo Chazal Darshu. What did Chazal say? Line 2. Hu Hivdil Bein Ish Lishto Bein Ish Lirei'ehu. Lefikach Amrat Torah Badad Yeshev. Line 4. Efshar Leharchiv Et Hadibur Velomar. I want to be marchiv what the Gemara says, and this is what I want to say. Ki hamisaper lashon harashon shonegaim. Line 6. Sone et habriot. He hates people. He doesn't love people. He hates people. Vini d'melo. And what does he think? What are his impressions? Well, he thinks, for example, line 7, Sheruvein mekapeach parnasato. Reuven, his boss, is cheating him out. I was supposed to make 100, and he gave me 90. He was skimming off the top. Veshimon lo nahag bo kavod kara'ui. He has all these imaginations. Shimon didn't treat me properly, didn't respect me properly. Onit kabe biklono. This person, Shimon, in this example, was mitkabed biklono. He got honor out of my dishonor. He laughed at somebody else. He laughed at me. Or he disrespected me. I deserve this amount of kavod, and he gave me less. Ulefikach. Line 9 in the middle. Hu marbet lesaber bignuto shel Reuven bifnei Shimon. U bignuto shel Shimon lifnei Reuven. Line 11. Guess what? Reuven, you think he's such a nice guy? Everybody gives him all the kavod? I want to tell you something. He's my boss. He doesn't pay me everything I'm supposed to get paid. I'm just telling you. You can do what you want. I didn't say anything. You know, you can always get away with whatever you want as long as you say, I didn't say anything. Or you can say, I'm just saying all the poskim paskin that you can say all the lashon hara in the world as long as you say I'm just saying at the end of it. Because then you're completely exempt. I mean, you're just saying. Hey, listen, Shimon dishonored me. You think he's so nice? He wasn't so nice to me. I'm just saying. Oh, you're just saying. Oh, then fine. That's not Lashon Hara anymore. Then I don't hate Shimon. I'm not going to destroy his reputation. I'm just saying. You drop a grenade and run away. Okay. Says Rav Zalman Sarutskin, the psychology behind it is gorgeous. Umi sinat haprat hu over l'sinat haklal. Do you think that this guy's negativity stops only with Reuven or only with Shimon? No. Everyone. Think people, it's a proven fact. I've seen it, and I'm sure you've seen it. That's a better way to say it. People who look for negative things about people are negative people. It's not just Reuven or Shimon. And by the way, if it is Reuven, if Reuven really did cheat me, and you really are asking me, should I go work for Reuven, I am allowed, I'm required to sit you down and tell you things that I myself know, not what I heard, what I know. That's helping you. Shiduchim. What do you think of Reuven? I think he's an amazing guy. I will tell you that I worked for him, and I will tell you that I know that he didn't pay me everything. Okay, but usually it doesn't stop there. Line 11 again. Umisinat pratu over lisinat klal v'nidmelo shekol haolam kulo lo nivra ela bishvilo. By the way, as you're hearing this about Lashon Hara, you can hear other sins of the seven we listed coming up. The whole world is created for me. What does that sound like? That sounds like number 5. Kasut Ruach. And if everyone's cheating me, I'm never going to give tzedakah. What am I, a loser? I'm not a sucker. I'm going to give away. This one's going to steal from me. This one's going to steal from me. That's miserliness. You see the psychology of all of these sins. Can come to this. Shekol haolam kulo lo nivra ela bishvilo v'kol ba'ei olam, and everybody who got, every worldly creature, so to speak, goes lean v'chomsin et ha'shayach ach v'rak lo. Everybody is out to get me. And no one's going to ever say that because everyone's always right. But their Lashon Hara has just, it's the hatred spreads and spreads. Ulefikach, line 15, Hayarotze, Shekol b'nei adam yamutu. You know what? I don't really mean this, but I hope they all die. Because I can't live with anybody else. Etc., etc., etc. I'm skipping to line 17. Uchedei lirapoto mimachalat hanefesh, shehi sibat machalat gufo. In order to cure him from this psychological illness. Amra Torah, line 19, Badat Yeshev Michutz Lamachane Moshavo. Get out of here. Tinatein lo she'elato. Give him what he wants. You hate people? Good. And I'm going to say, Rav Zalman Sfratzin is not saying this, I'm going to say that he's actually going to enjoy it. It's a vacation from all those jerks. A day to myself, finally. No, I can live alone. Nobody can bother me. No one can take away from my kavod. No one can steal from me. Thank God. Until Yitom, line 20. Yitom ha'ish hazeh tam shel bididut gura. This is called solitary confinement. At some point, Az betach yitgaageya el min ha'adam. At some point, he is going to start missing people. V'yikabel alav l'nashek et afar raglo shel ha'ish harishon. He's going to kiss the ground under the first person. She'yitratze l'shevet l'daber imo. You want to talk to me? Kiss the ground that he's walking on. I just got to talk to somebody about something. Line 25. Those dots, by the way, is where I cut. I didn't quote the whole thing. V'yeshivato shel hatzarua badar michutz l'machaneh muvdal afilu mishar tmeim. A person who has to sit like this from either, even from other tmeim, Tilamdenu le'ehov et kol b'nei ha'adam ve'et chevratam. It's going to teach them to love people. V'lachlok imahem afilu et prusat lachmo, to actually share, because I need them. U'kishu tzoek tamei tamei lo dia tzaro l'rabim shiyavakshu alav rachamim. And he's going to scream out on his way out there and on his way back, I'm tamei. And we know why you're tamei. We know why. Halo yasim elibo, he is going to internalize line 32, shehu pone ata elotam harabim shehirba lekalel otam ulechanot otam b'shem ra'im v'chataim v'atahu mitzapeh. The very same people that a week ago or 2 weeks ago we cursed. No one is as smart as me. No one is as wise as me. Everybody's taking from me. Nobody gives me the proper respect. And he's going to scream, Tamei, Tamei. And Rashi tells us, based on the Gemara, that he screams, Tamei, Tamei, to ask other people, I need you. A minute ago, I didn't need you. I hated you. And now, I need you. We're going to teach him how to love. We're going to teach him how to need other people. We're going to teach him how he's not shalem by himself. This idea is a very similar idea, only I think taking it one step further, to an idea that is said by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who died in 1978. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz was the Rosh Yeshiva in Mir. And he says the following in his Sichos Musar. But first he quotes the Gemara at the bottom of the first page. The Gemara in Masechet Nedarim Daf Samach Dalet Amud Bet. Sound familiar? It will in a minute. Tanya, Arba'a Chashuvim Kemet. There are four people who are alive, but are considered dead. Who are they? Ani, a poor person, God forbid. Metzora. Suma, what does Suma mean?
Blind
person. Umi she'ein lo banim. Wow, that's really, really, really strong. Why? Now, Sichos Musar, as you know, if you've ever learned him, he answers in a very lengthy way. I took snippets, and turn the page over, please. I took snippets from Ma'amar Samach Gimel, from Parashat Tazria Metzora, that he said in 1972. So he says a lot more. I'm going to say a lot less. Ubiur hadvarim hu kinire dema she'amru arba'a chashuvim kemet ein zestam tziruf shel kama mikrim. I'm in the middle of line two. This is not just a accidental combination of four different people who have unfortunate circumstances. Shel kama mikrim umlalim, unfortunate people, hanachshavim kemita, ela kulam inyan echad hem umlamdim ze, and we can learn one from the other. Vehu, line four. Vehu atam shesuma chashuv kemet. I skipped a lot. Ki belo chush hariya ein ha'adam mesugal lehargish et zulato. Line five. Without seeing, it is next to impossible to see a person and to feel the other person. Ulehishtateif imo b'matzavo, and to join in on their problems. Line five. V'harei hu kemi shesharui levado b'olam u'kemet yechashev. He's dead. Why is he dead? He can eat. He can make money. He can laugh. But he can't fully, we can teach him, he has to overcome, but he can't fully, without training, can't fully empathize. Can't fully empathize. And I am not going to spend time on this now, except for a 30-second tangent, that this is one, I'm not joking, although it sounds funny, this is one of the great maladies of texting. Texting is two blind people talking to each other. It's two blind people talking to each other. When I see somebody and I say, how are you? And you say, fine. Or if I see you and I say, how are you? And you say, fine. Or if I write to you, how are you? And you write F-I-N-E. Like, oh, they are going to kill someone. I don't know who. They're going to kill someone. We lose the ability to say, what's the matter? What's the matter? Now, why is that nechshav kemet? Line 6. V'nira shekein hu b'kol ha'arba ha'chashuvim kemet shekulam yisod echad lahem. It all comes down to our parsha. Habadad yeshev shel ha'mitzora Zohi mitato. We kill the Mitzora. We kill him. We kill him. Here we go. Kime Acher, line 7. Kime Acher she'eno yachol lihiyot im acherim. Eino yachol lahargish b'matzavo shel azulat. V'litein lo. V'arei hu kemet. I'm not going to finish reading, but this is a Rabbi Shmulevitz that is well publicized, a person who is dead is someone who cannot give. They cannot give in the ultimate way. Now I want to clarify, because some of us know blind people and some of us know poor people. Just like a mitzora can come back from the dead, so can a blind person, so can a poor person, so can a person without children. And I'm not saying that they need to regain their sight or regain their wealth or give birth to children. I am saying just like a mitzora can be taught, like in those nine la Torah, how to give, so can a blind person, so can a person without children. But the yesod, the message, is explosive. If you cannot give, then what's the point of being here? If you cannot give, then what's the point of being here? I'm going to say parenthetically, I don't know, it's definitely a true idea. I'm just not sure how historically accurate this is, but it's still a beautiful idea. If you travel from here, basically straight east, think on the map, If you go straight east, you will hit the northern tip of the Yam HaMelech. Anytime you look on a map of Israel, go to the top of Yam HaMelech, go a little bit to your west, or a little bit to your west, and that's Yerushalayim. Okay? Tip of Yam HaMelech. In English, Yam HaMelech is not called the Salt Sea, it is called the Dead Sea. Every sea is salty. Why is the Dead Sea called the Dead Sea? Because it takes all the water from the Yarden and gives it to nobody. Gives it to nobody. The Dead Sea takes all the water and lets it sit there. You're going to take and not give? That's death. That's death. And that's the Omer, that's the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, that's the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. These are all death. Death is not being able to give. Some of us are physically not able to give, and some of us are not mentally able to give. And giving takes all forms. Before I get to the last piece, I want to share with you a story. And as I was thinking about this last night, I don't think I told you. If I told you, you can either tell me or you can hear Chazara, okay? Here we go. When I was in Smicha, my last year of Smicha, in Yeshiva University, they make you do Shimush. Shimush is when they it's like a job. It's a internship, sort of. And you can do all sorts of things. You can teach as an internship. You can be an assistant rabbi of a shul as an internship. Shimush. I quote about your father all the time. He did shimush with the American Army. Okay. I did shimush with Beth Israel Medical Center. It is a large hospital on the lower Manhattan, and I worked the chaplain, I believe still today, in the Beth Israel Medical Center. The huge Beth Israel Medical Center is a man by the name of Rabbi Sheldon Goldsmith. We are not related. But as a very young smicha guy, it wasn't so bad for me to pick up the phone and say, hi, this is Rabbi Goldsmith, and get doors open for me because they thought I was Rabbi Sheldon Goldsmith, who was twice my age. And I'm not sure if I ever corrected them. But I didn't really work directly under him. I worked in the hospice. I worked in a hospice. For those of you who don't know what a hospice is, I believe it hasn't changed that much, in those days at least. A hospice is a program. Could be in a hospital, it could be run through a hospital, it could be completely separate, where people go. They are can only be admitted if doctors predict that they have only 6 months to live or less. And it is a place to go to die peacefully, God willing, and painlessly, God willing. I have only kept a diary twice in my whole life. Once was I went to Poland for the first time in 1990, and once when I worked for a hospice in 1993 in Beth Israel Medical Center Hospice. And I have 100 stories. It was a very powerful year for me. I work with people who died all the time. I have a story about how I helped a monk die. I have a story how I helped a Haitian man with AIDS die. And it's not about me. You want to hear about the monk, don't you? Okay. maybe a little later. The way that hospice worked in those days, I haven't really kept in touch with anybody, but I understand when I was there, they had about 300 patients. 300 patients and only 8 beds in the hospital. All the other patients were at home, where they could live their last days in their own room with their own family. And it was a really painful and beautiful experience. So I was trained to make house calls. And one of my, and early on, I went with the guy, I was the rabbinic intern myself, Rabbi Goldsmith, rabbinic intern. And the other rabbinic intern was Rabbi Lori, I forgot her whole name. She was a rabbi from JTS. At the time, she was the oldest female rabbi in America. I probably was the youngest, because I got smicha like a day before. So, look at that. And we worked, our mentor was a man by the name of Rabbi Levitz. Rabbi Levitz. Anyway, so he took me on a few house calls to begin with, and then I went on my own for the rest of the year. Did I tell you the story? No. I didn't, okay. So we're talking about learning how to give. I was ready. And we had a plan, and we went to visit a woman. This woman had been in the hospice for 2 years. Now, you may ask, I thought you said that a person can only be in a hospice if doctors give them 6 months. It is true, but doctors sometimes are wrong. Turns out that God's in charge. Who knew? God's in charge. Okay. I have a brother-in-law who's a surgeon, and he told me this joke, so I'm allowed to say it. He said, what is the difference between God and a surgeon? The difference is between a God and a surgeon is that at least God knows he's God. He told me that story, that joke. That's a funny joke. Anybody have a mother or father who's a surgeon? Don't tell them I said it, but he told it to me, so. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Levitz and I, young intern, experienced hospice chaplain. We visit this woman. She's on a hospice program for 2 years. Every 6 months, they have to get reevaluated. And each time, the doctor said, yes, now she has 6 months. And she kept living, and she kept living. The end of the story is that she was miserable. She was miserable. She complained. Why won't God let me die? It's a powerful thing. All her friends, all her family had passed away, and it was powerful. Okay, anyway. But she was on, when I met her, she was already in her fourth 6 months. Painful. We walk in. Rabbi, so nice to see you. He says, oh, this is Rabbi Goldsmith. He's going to be visiting from now on. Wonderful. Come and have a seat. She turns to me. This is an old woman who has been told she has 6 months to live. She turns to me and she says, Rabbi, can I get you something? And I go, I said, she goes, do you want some cookies? And I said, IOF. No, I didn't say, I said to myself, I want cookies. Yeah, give me cookies. Give me a lot of cookies. No, thank you. I just ate. It was a lie, but okay. No, thank you. No, thank you. She turns to Rabbi Levitz. He had been visiting her for a long time. Rabbi, would you like some cookies? He goes, you know I love them. And I looked at him like, I mean, she's dying. You're taking cookies from a dying woman. There has to be some place, you know where, for people who take cookies from a dying person. I mean, I'll tell you what, Rabbi, I got a couple bucks in my pocket. I'll buy you cookies afterwards. He goes, oh, I cookies. And she comes out with one of those cookies that has like styrofoam on the bottom and it's plastic on top and there's a blue label, you know? Okay, I don't know what they are. What? What's that? Okay, anyway, she takes them out. It's like an oval, I think. Yeah, has a Jewish name to it. It's kosher. And she gave it to him, and he put it in his bag. Man. Okay, I have to remember, write myself a mental note, refresh my resume. I am switching. No, I'm kidding. But we went on. It was a very special meeting, and I had met with her a lot of times after that. I kept notes and everything. But that first meeting, and he prays for her, and good. As we're walking out, as we did with every one of these meetings, we sat down somewhere. She lived on the Lower East Side. We sat down on some bench. And all the others, he says, okay, let's review, you know, what did you think, you know? And we talked about the prayer that he said, and we talked about how bitter she was, and how do you respond to that? He said, do you have any other questions? And I said, you know, no. And he goes, any other questions? Ever read The Chosen?
Yeah.
Remember when the Rebbe asked the boy, do you have any questions about my gematria?
Yeah.
No. You sure? No. You sure? He was wrong. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was a good part of the book. He goes, you have any questions? I go, no. He goes, are you sure? I go, no. He goes, you want a cookie? I go, how did you? He goes, you didn't keep your facial expressions. I said, yeah. What I wanted to say was, how evil. No, I'm joking. I wanted to say, like, what the heck? But, you know, I use worse language. No, I said, what you do? But what I said was, yeah, I'm curious to know. And he says, do you think I'm hungry? Do you think I want cookies? I don't know. You're the one who took the cookies. He says, this is a woman for 2 years who has been in hospice. Every nurse that visits her gives to her. Every volunteer from the hospital, every medical clown, every visiting doctor, every person who does Bikur Cholim from the Satmar community, they all give to her and give to her and give to her. And they are killing her because they are not giving her an opportunity to give to them. She wanted to give. And I let her give me cookies. I was changed forever. I apologized to him. I said, that is the most beautiful thing in the world. He said, obviously you have to, you know, you can't do too much. You can't, but she wants to give me cookies. And she is helping me. And they were kosher. He goes, I'm going to eat them. She really did give me something. And I gave to her by letting her give to me. Isn't that gorgeous? Mm-hmm. That's letting somebody live by letting them give you. Letting them give you. And I'm not great at this. I'm not. There's something to be done. I remember specifically, Joy is the smart one in the family. And she one time I got a call from a neighbor.
It's not exactly the same story, but really quickly, it's a very silly story, but I remember it very strongly. He called me up and he goes, I'm moving a couch from upstairs to downstairs, can you help me? And I say, of course, give me a couple seconds, and, you know, I'll be right over. Hung up, and she goes, are you happy that he called? I said, what? She goes, are you happy that I called? I said, actually, yeah, I'm actually flattered that he feels close enough to me to ask me to schlep a couch. And he goes, I'm strong enough. That was also pretty, and she goes, he gave you something. He let you be a friend. And she was right. And since then, I haven't taken out the garbage once since I let everybody else do it for me. No, it's a certain form of giving. And it's a certain form of letting somebody live. And with that, I want to move on to the last idea, which is golden. Everything's golden. The Torah's golden. This is also golden. And there's no such thing as a favorite of our Torah. And with that, we'll say the following. The Torah tells us that as part of the Tahara process of the Metzorah, the Torah tells us what a person has to do to become Tahor. There's a lot of things they have to do. And one of the things they have to do is in the middle of the second page. It's in Parashat Metzorah, in the beginning of Parashat Metzorah, Perek Yudalid. Tziva Kohen. I think it should say Vitziva Kohen. Vilakach Lamitaher Shtei Tziporim Chayot Tehorot. A person has to bring two live birds. Ve'etz Erez. And a cedar plank. Ushni tolat ve'ezov. There's a lot to say here. Where else do we use an ezov from? We use an ezov when we left Mitzrayim. We use an ezov when we are become tahor from the para aduma. Okay. Eitz erez. Erez is a weak or strong tree. Huge, strong. Ke erez balvanon yisge. Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the two birds. The Torah tells us a few psukim later. That one bird is shechted, blood is spilled, and a whole ceremony happens to that bird. And there's a second bird. And the second bird is let free. And the question is why? What's the significance? And the Sfat Emet, Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Leib Alter, who dies in the beginning of the last century, the Sfat Emet tells us the following. He quotes the Zohar HaKadosh. Ita b'Zohar HaKadosh, Parashat Tazria. Dehanagain ba'im. The Zohar was written in Aramaic, so we have to read some Aramaic here. Nagain kam al mila bisha v'al malin tavin. Nagain kam because of Mila Bisha. What does Mila Bisha mean? You know the word Mazel Bisha? What does Bisha mean? Ra. Bisha means Ra. Resh Ayin. Nagayim come for evil words and Al Malin Tavin. Malin or Milin? Milin Tavin. Tavin means good words. The Zohar says that we get Nagayim for evil words and good words. What does that mean? Ladies, take this and put this in your pocket for the rest of your life. What does it mean? And the Sfas Emes doesn't explain the Zohar. He goes on to a little bit of a different topic. There is a sefer written by Rav Dov Zev Weinberger called Shemen HaTov. It's quoted very often. I never would have heard of it if it wasn't for Rabbi Yisachar Frand. He quotes him all the time. And the Shemen HaTov here has a glorious, glorious answer. I think this is today's FMT, this part of it. He says the following. Everybody knows, and we've been talking for the last few minutes, about the evils of bad words, about the evils of Lashon Hara and Rechilut
and Motzi Shemra. And take a look at all the sources that we have at the top of the page. Being conceited and being miserly. We get that. We get that. But what we don't get is there is an equal damage, equally dangerous, if not more dangerous. And that comes from good words. What do you mean from good words? Good words that are not shared. Good words that are not shared. We talked about giving and how giving keeps you alive, makes you alive, defines you as alive. Giving doesn't only mean your money. Giving, it does. It doesn't only mean your car or your pencil. It does. Giving means your words. Kol hakavod. Great job. You can do it. Are you okay? I'm sorry you're not feeling well. These are gifts that nobody else can give. You say thank you to a bus driver. You take it for granted because you're very nice people. I would bet that the bus driver we had today heard 90% of his thank yous today from you. He's just a bus driver. Why do you have to waste your... I'm very important. And I don't need to lower myself to some loser who drives a cab or a bus or who cleans the house. I don't need to... I'm bigger than that. I'm not a... And that's the way a lot of people talk. That's the way a lot of people think. That's the way a lot of people act. And we get negayim when we have something to say, and we all have something to say, and we choose not to say it. And the Shemen HaTov doesn't say this, but there's a gorgeous, gorgeous story which I think ties in perfectly. And the story goes like this. There's a woman who was having tremendous trouble at home. Maybe it was Parnassa, maybe it was health, maybe it was Shalom Bayit, but real trouble. And she goes, like all of us should, God forbid, if you have any troubles. She went to her advisor, in this case it was her rabbi. She makes an appointment, she sits down with him, and she says, "Rabbi, things are falling apart, what should I do?" And he says to her, "Listen, I'm not a Navi, so I have no idea. No, but please help me. Any suggestions? Obviously this is a message, what can I do?" And the rabbi says, "Listen, I am not a Navi, but if you are asking, I noticed that you've been speaking a lot of Lashon Hara recently. Maybe cut down. Maybe stop." And he talks to her, and she's a special person. She accepted the Musar. And she says, "Thank you, I'm on it." And she walks out of his office, and immediately, on the porch, outside of his house, the door closes behind her, and she takes a neat dibur, she takes a neder that she won't speak for 40 days. Not recommended. She takes a tiny dibur for 40 days. She makes up little notes to tell people. And everywhere she goes, she can't talk. She's got a point to her. And she does it. Day 1 and day 2 and day 5 and day 10 and day 15 and day 20. On day 23, she meets her rabbi in the street. He goes, "How's it going?" And she takes out the note. He reads the note. She's on the Tinus Dibur for 40 days. He says, "Whoa." He says, "Please, when the 40 days are over, please come to my office." She nods her head, and off she goes. She's really happy. Day 25, day 30, day 35, day 40. She's a new person. She walks into his office, and she says, "Rabbi, I did it." He goes, "What'd you do?" She says, "I didn't speak Lashon Hara 40 days. The rabbi says, "Come with me, I want to show you something." And he escorts her out of his office, and they walk around back, and behind the office is a horse tied to a tree. And the rabbi points to the horse and says, "See this horse? The horse hasn't spoken Lashon Hara in 40 days either."
She got the message. There's no patent in not speaking for 40 days. You took away the very tool, the very gift-giving potential that you have, you gave it away. The trick is to not speak Lashon Hara while you're engaged in the world. The trick is to not speak Lashon Hara while you're giving Malin Tavin, while you're giving good things, encouragement, a nice joke at the right time, in the right place, in the right way, cheering somebody up, giving advice, taking advice, giving to other people. Ladies, each one of you, me too, we are all blessed with the power of speech. Not everybody has that. Those of us who worked with certain populations know that not everybody knows how to speak. Some of us work with geriatric patients who don't know how to speak. And we were talking about this earlier. We all do know how to speak, Baruch Hashem. And we have a choice. We can hold our gift of speech back, or we can share it and we can give it to others. And this is a season of giving, of giving, of giving. This is a season of living. Because we're not just taking, we're living. Emir Tashem. Have an amazing evening, everybody.